Are you ready to cheat on your wife? No, I'm not talking about that kind of cheating. I'm talking about gaining an unfair advantage on how to understand your wife better, love her deeper, avoid unnecessary arguments, and even have more sex with her. That's right. Based on the success of our Marriage Secrets for Men boot camps, we're finally sharing the Marriage Cheat Sheet for Men with the public. This is the quick reference, must-have, go-to guide for husbands and wannabe husbands that can help stack the odds in your favor. The Bible tells us to live with our wives in an understanding way. Well, the Marriage Cheat Sheet for Men is your shortcut to doing that. So you'll learn 4 questions you can ask your wife in every argument to avoid future arguments. You'll learn the 45 questions you can ask her to learn and master her heart. 50 ways to love your wife better. 6 things you can say to her to manage her response before you damage her emotions. 10 things you can do right now that will lead to more sex. 8 ways to get her to stop ignoring you, even 49 ways to have more meaningful conversations with your wife, and much, much more. See, this is the manual every divorced man wishes he had before he got married. Well, at least I did. And I'm so God confident that the Marriage Cheat Sheet will become one of the most valuable referred to resources in your marriage library, that if you don't think so, just send it back for a full refund. Trust me, next to our Marriage Secrets for Men Bootcamp, this will be the 2nd best investment you'll ever make in your marriage. Now, to get your copy of the Marriage Cheat Sheet for Men on sale for a limited time only, just go to realmenconnect.com and click on the store button. That's realmenconnect.com.
Welcome to Real Men Connect. Are you ready to be the extraordinary man, husband, father, and leader God called and created you to be? Then get ready to receive wisdom and guidance from some of the country's most respected men of faith as you learn everything you need to know to go from good man to great man, God's way. No judgment, no shame. Just real men with real challenges seeking real change. All for God's glory.
Hello, mighty men of God, and welcome to the Real Men Connect podcast, where we help good men become great men God's way. I'm your host, Dr. Joe Martin, and every week we interview some of the nation's most respected and accomplished men of faith to find out what it really takes to become the kind of husband, father, and spiritual leader God called and created us to be. Each interview session is packed with practical, proven biblical principles you can immediately apply in your relationships, on your job, and in your community. And today we have with us Gary Black. And Gary Black says that he's living the dream. He has been called forth for the young leaders and strengthening them and helping them pursue their passion through the world race, as well as he's the director at G42 Leadership Academy. And everywhere Gary goes, he is fulfilling the purpose of his life. And he calls it the Malachi Mandate, which it was not him calling it, the Bible calls it that, which is to turn the hearts of the parents back to the children and the hearts of the children back to the parents, which I'm so excited that he's picked up the mantle to do that. And Gary's heart is first and foremost with his children and grandchildren and with the love of his life, Lisa Marie. And guys, I met Gary through a mutual friend of ours, and that's, let me give a quick shout out to Bruce Sproul, who introduced me to Gary, and he arranged the introduction. And Gary has been mentoring and discipling him, and I tell you that Bruce is a wonderful dude. So Gary, if he likes you, you can't be too bad.
Amen. What a good young man.
But as a result of Bruce introducing us, Gary and I had a chance to connect by phone. And as you will soon hear, Gary's passion and love for Christ is infectious. And I asked him to be on the podcast to learn more about his personal journey, not only as a man and a husband and father and of a blended family, but also as a spiritual leader in the G4 Leadership Academy and the world race. And I can't wait. So please join me in welcoming to the Real Men Connect podcast my new friend and brother in Christ, Gary Black. Thanks for joining us, Gary.
Thank you so much, Dr. Joe, man. What a privilege. I love being here.
You know, and Gary, I told you even before we came on air that this interview is going to be a little bit different because typically we stay on topic and we address an issue that is related to men. But your life, I'm so intrigued with what you're doing with G42 and your life story. So we're going to spend a little bit more time than normal talking about your story and how G42 came about and what the world race is all about. But what I'm hoping that the men will glean from this conversation is your journey as a man, a husband, and a father, because you have a great story to share, and I can't wait to share it with them. But Gary, what we always do when we ask men on the show, we ask them to share with us their favorite Bible verse from scripture that inspires them, and it could be a life verse or a verse right now you're clinging to on this season in your life. And Gary, what's yours, man?
Well, you know, you said it, Joe. I mean, Malachi 4, 5, and 6 of God turning the hearts of the children back to the parents and the parents' hearts back. And I'm going to break the curse and I'm going to cover the whole earth in God's glory as the waters cover the sea. And that's just been my life verse for 30 years. God spoke it to me so clearly as a young man stepping into ministry in my mid-20s. And the second one I'm kind of just holding on to for this generation, and I want to see it return, is 1 Corinthians 4:20. And a lot of my kids that have come out of the drug culture know what 4:20 is, so I can help them memorize scripture real well. But it's God, you know, the kingdom of God, the kingdom of heaven is not mere talk, but power. And man, I think the generation's hungry to see the power of God again. And so I would say those are my two that I'm living in.
You know, and Gary, I got to tell you, as always, we've now probably over 350 something episodes now, and you're the first to ever give us two.
Okay. I could have kept going, man.
I love it. So that means you're going to stand out as a guest to me, because I remember there's always was one guy who gave us two. But I love both of those. Love both of those. Now, you just mentioned about that verse, that life verse was given to you about 30 years ago. Let's start back with your story, man. Everybody has a story. And your story, I want you to go back. Prior to, tell me what was it like being little Gary, and what was growing up like for you, man?
You know, it's an incredible journey, isn't it, for all of us? And everybody has a story. I was raised in a conservative Christian Missionary Alliance home. An incredible mother. She passed away 2 years ago. She was my main intercessor for my whole life, kept me alive. A cowboy for a dad. He was a literal bull rider. His father was a raging alcoholic, beat his mom to death in front of him and would pull guns on him. He left the house at 18 and didn't know, was never fathered, didn't know how to be a father. And so he practiced on us three kids. I'm the youngest. I have an older sister who just passed away that was special needs, and an older brother. So we were Christians, but it was that, you know, every Sunday you go to the altar and then you come home and pray that you don't die because so you won't go to hell kind of life. And then when I was about 7, my mom got baptized in the Holy Spirit and just came alive. And she prayed for me and I prayed in the Spirit for about 2 hours when I was 7 years old. And our whole life shifted and we joined another church, a Pentecostal church, which still had its own religion, you know, still had its own stuff. But that's how we were raised. My dad was angry, but at 16, him and I became best friends. It's an incredible story of how our hearts connected. And I kind of helped him become a father in a way. And we're still best friends. He's 80 years old. But I got away from the Lord about 19. I started working and making a ton of money as a young guy and got a girl pregnant. And when I found out that she was pregnant, man, I said, I'm going to marry her and I'm going to turn my whole life around. Me and my family will serve the Lord. So I did. I stopped all the partying. I stopped all the stuff, married the girl, knowing that she was mentally ill. She had a lot of different diseases and would break our house apart. It was very violent. But I thought, you know, I had a Jesus complex. I thought, I'm going to fix her. And so we had our first son, Tyler, which absolutely changed my life. I just held him up to the window when he was born and wept, and something shifted in my spirit. And I was a VP of a telecom company, and I got offered 5 different positions. Youth pastor of the largest church in the nation at the time, associate pastor up in there. I was 24 years old.
Wow.
And I chose to sell everything and move to Kansas City and start this ministry. We didn't even know what we were going to call it yet, under a guy named Mike Bickle out in Kansas City. And I did it. We sold everything. We moved. We had 2 sons by this time. Our third boy was born out there in Kansas City, but my wife was just getting worse and worse and not getting better. My home life was absolutely miserable, Joe. And my ministry life was blowing up. We started calling the Youth of America to prayer and fasting in 1995, 96. We were filling stadiums full of kids. We didn't think they would fast, but they would show up to Colorado Springs, Colorado for a week. We made 600 hamburgers one time and only sold 2 because the kids fasted with us. What I'm seeing right now in my ministry, Joe, is what we prayed and fasted for in those days. But by 1999, I was kind of the top of the game. I was, you know, Charisma Magazine, the top 30 preachers under 30 and all the stuff. And, you know, I thought I was kind of cool, as a lot of young men do that don't have that full fathering or that full initiation, which is one of my passions that I'm that I do and I'm about. But 1999, my wife decided that she was going to falsely accuse me of all kinds of things. She took my three sons and she disappeared with them. And filed a restraining order against me, which the courts, of course, took. And I was literally in our last event. It was called Rock the Nations, our ministry.
Yeah, which, I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah, it turned into The Call and The One and all kinds of different ministries now. But we had about 10,000 kids in Colorado Springs camping and fasting and crying out for God. And Joe, we would have the presence of God. We had angels descending and ascending in the auditorium and, you know, demonic manifestations everywhere. And it was just a powerful time of God. But I would crawl under the stage in a little ball because I didn't know where my family was. And I would introduce men like Lauren Cunningham, who, you know, the founder of YWAM, or Dick Eastman, who, you know, birthed all of us into prayer in the 70s. And I couldn't find my family. And so literally the guy that I was serving under in Colorado Springs, you'd know his name. He was the number one pastor in the nation at the time and answered to President Bush. He looked at me and he said, "You know, Black, I know you're innocent. I know your home life. I know what it's all about, but you're making us look bad, so I'm going to blackball you." And I was bankrupt in 3 months. I lost my ministry, my family. I lost my reputation. And man, I was lost. I moved into the Youth with a Mission base in Colorado Springs, and this amazing man named Fred Markert would play his guitar all night in the room above me just to kind of keep me alive. And you know, it's a crazy story. I had to end up kidnapping my sons, actually. They were walking down the street and got them in my car and took them. And the police called. I said, "Look, get me in front of a judge that will hear my story and in front of social services." And, you know, to make a long story short, Joe, it took 3 years, but I got full custody of my boys and just fought for them for those 3 years. Lost everything. Lost my two homes and cars and everything. And in the midst of that, I met this widow. My life is very much like Elijah when he was by the brook, and you know the only thing that was feeding him was the ravens. And the brook dried up, and he found the widow. And God sent me this widow, Lisa Marie. Her husband had fallen down some steps in Michigan and broke his neck and died. And she had two little girls and been widowed for 5 years. And she just started reminding me of who I was again. You know, Eve means lifesaver, and our wives are to call out that shadow self in us, that little boy in us, and help us to become men of who we're supposed, how to lead, how to cover, how to protect, how to serve. And she did that. She was strength for me with the power of God in her life. And so we met, we started, we got the boys and her two girls. So we literally came together with five children. We had Noah, our sixth one, together. And we've been married now 19 years, and I can tell you, Joe, marriage is the most amazing thing beside our relationship with Jesus Christ. It's a phenomenal marriage and partnership that we have now. And so that's that was my story leading up to that. We kind of went back in to ministry. I built a couple of companies, made some money, lost some money. And I met, in those years of Rock the Nations, I met a guy named Andrew Shearman. He blew my mind with this message of hope, and that we cover the whole earth with God's glory as the waters cover the sea. And we win this thing called Christianity. You know, we weren't born to fill hell. God didn't create hell to fill it up. He created us to take the earth back and to subdue. And so it just made my heart come alive. Well, him and I and a guy named Seth Barnes, the founder of Adventures in Mission, got together, and a really good friend of mine, Dr. Tom Davis. And we sat around a room for two nights, and we just dreamed about what would it look like to initiate the youth of America. You know, it's the only country in the world where we haven't initiated our young men. And we said, what would it look like? And we dreamed up the world race, and we dreamed up G42. And guys, I want to say to you, man, if you have a dream in your heart, God will usually take you another direction, but keep dreaming because they become true, even in the midst of tragedy, even in the midst of horrible stuff. And so we started the world race in G42, and that's where we are today. So that's kind of my ministry story. We started World Race 12 years ago. We send 1,000 kids a year around the world. They do 11 countries in 11 months. I go and choose the leaders of the generation, and invite them here in Spain to G42 for 9 months of leadership training and how to go take the kingdom back for the glory of God.
Wow, Gary, I tell you, all I can say is wow. And it's like, we could spend the whole show just picking apart just pieces of your story, which I do want to go back and highlight certain things because I want to give the men some context. But at the same time, I can't wait to get more into this world race. I got to find out more about that as well as G42, because it's just an amazing work that you guys are doing, especially when you're talking about initiating the youth of America, our young people. What a great task to take on. But I want to go back and look at certain aspects of your story, because it's an amazing story. My goodness, I didn't know that much about you, Gary. I knew a little bit about you. I didn't know all that. And Bruce didn't tell me all that. But man, I'm thinking what your life sounds like, it should be in a movie or something.
Well, they made a documentary of our life before we lost our son, Michael. And so I don't know that our story had even started. You know, that first losing that first marriage was so devastating. Because, you know, the reason God hates divorce is because of what it does to his kids.
Yes.
It's like a tearing of my soul. My heart was being torn out of my chest. I was in love with my first wife, even in her sickness. And she pulled guns and all kinds of things. They have all this in a documentary about our story. But our life hadn't even begun. And so.
Wow. And see, yeah. You already alluded to something that we're going to talk about, which is the tragedy that you and Lisa Marie had to experience. But let me go back, because I do want to, man, what a fascinating story. I want to go back and let's start back with your dad. You know, because we're talking to men out there and men are listening. And, you know, I've heard and read different places and different resources and research has shown that most of the problems in America can be traced back to a father wound. And you seem to have great parents, pretty decent parents, good parents. What do you think you felt was missing from your relationship with your dad? Because he seems like a decent guy.
Yeah, he was an incredible man. I mean, he didn't know anything. And I think a lot of times, you know, I work with all these young people, thousands and thousands of them, and they come with their father wounds and mother wounds. And, you know, 90-some% of the time, we can get them to forgiveness pretty quickly, because most times parents just did the best job that they could do with what they were given. And, you know, we have lots of abuse and all those things are very real out there. Let me tell you, I still, my jaw drops on a daily basis still. But most of the time, our parents did the best they could do. My dad was angry. You know, I got thrown through a couple garage doors and, you know, we rode horses and hunted on horses and he would put a pine cone up my horse's butt and race me back to camp. And, you know, but it and, you know, I broke bones and it was just a wild little bit of a life. But you know what it did is it gave me that warrior archetype of a man. And then at 16, I got kicked off the basketball team and my dad, the only game he decided to show up to is the one I'm kicked off of.
Oh.
And I'm walking out of the gym kind of angry at my coach and my dad's arm goes around me. And I'm like, oh my gosh. I'm thinking, he says, get home. You know, every way that I could die to get home, I'm thinking of. And I walk in the kitchen, you know, his arms are crossed. He's got that scowl on his face. And I just started screaming. I could never live up. You know, I saw my dad as most of us see God. This angry ogre of a man. I always say he's like Sean Connery. This is my son whom I love. You know, it's a terrible Sean Connery. That's how we picture God, this angry old God, right? And so I just yelled at my dad. And I just, you know, I'll never be good enough for you. Not enough for about an hour and a half, 2 hours, Joe. And when I was done, he had tears running down his face. And I'll never forget it. He looked at me and he said, you know, Gary, if I lined you up with all your friends, and he named a bunch of my friends, he said, I'd choose you every single time to be my son. Because of the gift of God and the beauty that's in you and who you are as a man. And we embraced and held and we became best friends that day. And my dad's heart began to turn towards mine and mine towards him. And then he and I were ordained together at a church called New Life Church in Colorado Springs in 1994, I think, 95. And the whole place started shaking. People started falling out of their chairs. And it was all around Malachi 4, 5, and 6. He was talking about the father's heart back to the son and the son back to the father. And my dad and I were ordained in ministry together and we've been all over the world together. And so I just want to, you know, any men out there with that horrible feeling of that man thing, that father hole, man, it can be healed and it can be healed in a radical way. And so yeah, that's my story with my dad.
Yeah, because I wanted to get back to that because when I hear these these things happen in a man's life, I want to know what role did his dad play in it. And so one of my next questions, going back to your story, is as now when you meet your wife, you know, well, you get her pregnant at 19 and you get married. What did your parents say about, how did they counsel you through this? And because that's a lot to put on a young person, to deal with the person who's struggling mentally like that. What counsel did they give you, and how did your dad support you during that time?
Well, you know, my dad wanted me to get away because he knew how hard it was going to be. My mom, all she wanted to do was see my first wife that I lost married or healed. And so she brought in this prophetic woman that's still in my life. And this woman prayed over us. And she first off called my wife out and said, she went by a different name. And she said, "That's not your God-given name. That is a name that a demon gave you when you were little." She just started speaking into her spirit. And first time that my wife admitted was true. And then she knew, she saw that we were pregnant. We hadn't told her that. And she prayed for her for a long time. But she was walking me out to the car and she said, "Gary, there's two demonic influences in that little girl's life. And you're going to have a really, really hard life." And she said, "I want you to know I'm going to intercede for you every day." And she was right. But, you know, when you look back now, it was a gift because it made me a better father. It made me a better man. It made me who I am today because I learned how to sit in my pain and let my pain transform me instead of transmitting my pain on everyone around me, which I used to do. And so we're either transformed by our pain or we transmit it on everybody. And part of what I needed to walk through as a man was that suffering to get my ego to actually start to die a bit. And so yeah, that was tough. My mom was amazing and prayed for us and walked with us. And so did my dad, but man, he wanted me to get away. He knew. So,
you know, I can't imagine, being that age, having to deal with that kind of pressure. And I guess before I get into another question, we're going to eventually get to G42. We're going to get to other stuff. But I mean, I'm just fascinated by men's story, because I always think there's traces of grace. There's lessons to be learned if we dig deep enough. And that's why I always hope the Holy Spirit is leading me in asking certain questions. But what kind of impact, and I guess this is from your perspective, obviously, because you can't speak for them, but what kind of impact do you think that she had on your sons being exposed to some of the influences that she was under in this, I guess, this turbulence in the relationship?
Well, you know, one of the things I learned through all that is kids don't care what parent is right. They don't care what one did what to who. They just love their mom and they love their dad, and it tears them apart. And it was a very difficult lesson for me to learn walking through that. But you know, my wife now and I raised our boys. She raised our sons as though they were her sons. I mean, they started calling her mommy at a very early age because they didn't have a mom, and she wasn't allowed to see them. She was allowed to see them under, you know, with custody around and people there, but she stopped showing up. So they didn't see her till they turned 18, which was part of how we lost our middle son. And we'll get into that later, but it impacted them greatly. Because they, again, I think what we have to learn if we walk through divorce, and look, we know it's common ground, and we know a lot of time, we all hate it, and it's a horrible thing. But those of us that have walked through it, God will reboot that and restart things. But you know, you've got to remember, the kids don't care. All they want is to know that somebody believes in them and loves in them, and never talk against your spouse in the midst of that. And that's a difficult lesson to learn.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. You know, one more question going back. Yeah, I say that and I might come up with something else. But you mentioned about, as you were going through this, you're still doing ministry, and ministry is prospering, is growing. And that prominent pastor who will go unnamed, who I'm pretty sure everybody, I got my clue who it is, but we won't mention that person's name. But when he pulls you to the side and tells you that, "But I understand what you're going through and it's bad, but we can't have you part of this." I want to know, what kind of impact did that make on you personally as a man? We know what the impact it had on your life is, you know, financially, and you lose anything. But I mean, what did it do to your spirit, to your soul?
Oh, it crushed me. I saw him as a spiritual father, and he sowed, you know, tons of money and time into our ministry and really promoted us worldwide. And it was part of the reason he and Mike Bickle, which Mike Bickle still loves us and still promotes us, were the reason the ministry was so successful. And so it was a crushing blow. He literally said, I want to put you up in my attic, play soft music, and see you get healed. But he said, I don't know how to restore you because you haven't done anything wrong. So I'm going to go ahead and blackball you because you're making us look bad. And man, the phone stopped, Joe. I mean, it wasn't like a year later. It was within 3 months, our 10,000 square foot offices were empty. My staff, 45 staff were gone. It was over. And now he has come back to me and repented. He went through some horrible stuff, really bad things, and has come back from that and has a small church and he's doing fine. But, you know, we've reconciled. I would never go back and do ministry, right? I think you have to have boundaries and safe places for things. But, man, I love him and believe in him, and he loves me. And so, yeah, it was devastating, to say the least.
Now, because a lot of men experience being what we call a church hurt, and they take it personally, and it kind of just sidetracks them, and it turns them off to ministry totally. And they don't want to have anything to deal with in the ministry or even trust men again. How'd you deal with that, having experienced that? Because you still moved forward, even though this person did this, but typically that spills over into the rest of our relationships with men in ministry. How'd you overcome that?
You know, it's the thing that finally came to me. It took me time. No, I spoke against people. I was angry. I was not perfect at all in any of this. But, you know, we have hundreds of seasons in life, you know, 300, 400 seasons. And if we get stuck on one season, it can arrest and take away so much of our life. We can lose decades if we get stuck. You know, if we get into unforgiveness or anything like that with parents or people that have hurt us and betrayed us. And, you know, one of the journeys I'm on, one of my passions is the heart, you know, the 739 scriptures on the heart. And Jesus literally lived with an open heart with everything, even when Judas came to betray him. And he comes to kiss Jesus, and Jesus grabs him and says, Judas, oh man, my friend. You know, and I think that's why Judas went and hung himself. He felt so much conviction that Jesus even loved those that betrayed him. He loved those that his heart was still open to people, no matter what they did to him. And men trying to, you know, you can't learn that except by living it. And, you know, you can't ever teach what you haven't caught. And to me, impartation is the word, not just teaching a good message. You know, it's that whole 1 Corinthians, Paul says, you know, we have 10,000 teachers, not many fathers. And we need fathers. But the only way you become a father, Joe, is by walking through some really hard stuff and allowing it to transform you into more of Jesus Christ, instead of, again, becoming angry and transmitting that and getting stuck in that. And so just good people around me, people challenging me, Andrew Shearman and Seth Barnes, these guys that I still run with, been running with them for 25 years, and will continue to do so. Man, they asked the hard questions. They held my feet to the fire and helped me walk into forgiveness in every area of my life. And so it takes men with men. We've got to enter our pain with each other, not fix it. You know, look, if we take people off the cross too quickly and we scar them even more. We got to leave people in their pain. One of the things in this generation I'm teaching their parents, you know, we're doing these Rethink Retirement, calling the elders out because we won't do anything without the elders. It's a multi-generational movement that we have coming. But we tell them, do not take, you know, don't anesthetize and protect your kids from pain, because pain is the greatest teacher. But far too many times we try to stop the pain instead of allowing people to walk through it. And people left me in my pain and allowed me to try to walk through it. And they walked through it with me. They entered into it and they listened instead of quoting scriptures at me.
Yeah, absolutely. And those are great lessons for us to learn as men, because everybody has a story about how they've been betrayed or they've been hurt. But there's like I said, there's traces of grace in all of this, and there's something to be learned. But I love how you said that sometimes we take them off the cross too quickly.
We do.
Yeah. Man, there's something to be learned while you're on that cross. You know, there's a reason why we have to carry and bear our cross, because it's there to teach us something as well. You know, now I got to say, let's jump into this world race. Okay. Now you got to understand, Gary, you're talking to a black man from the hood who grew up in Miami, Florida, grew up in the projects. Dude, when I'm hearing a world race, I'm like, what in the world is a world race? And you kind of just went over it so quickly and so casually about all the countries and everything. But to me, that's phenomenal. And a lot of times I know from kids from the inner cities, we don't get exposed to anything even outside our community. let alone the world. So could you tell me about this war race so we can have a better understanding? Because you've been doing it so long, you don't even, you know, you're not in awe of it anymore. I'm in awe of it.
I'll tell you, we looked at the generation, and, you know, we've over-coddled them. We've put them on medication. I've got six kids in my G42 class right now. Six of their dads have died from pharmaceutical drugs and alcohol at before age 40.
Wow.
And so we've over-medicated the generations now for two generations. We've over-coddled them. We don't let them feel anything. And God still uses pain to transform us. So now it's all internal. It's depression and suicide. And you know, we'll talk about my son. I lost to suicide. And so it's a passion of mine, obviously. But we looked at the generation 12 years ago. And we said, man, we got to get them out of the fog of America. Because, you know, fatherlessness is the deal, right? And, you know, the inner city, it's 70%. Of every home doesn't have a dad, 66% of Hispanic, 50-some% of white American, right? And so, and it's a spirit that rests on a whole generation. So even if you have a good father, it still affects the generation in a way, or that person. I see it over and over and over. And so we said, let's get them out of the fog of America, the opulence, all the stuff, the consumers, right? Let's consumer church. Let's go to church, eat, and then let's go home and do our thing for a week instead of being activated. And so we've turned into a church of consumers. And we said, let's get these kids in the world. Let's get them into sex trafficking and let them help rescue sex trafficked girls. And let's get them into orphans that haven't eaten in 30 days and let them come up with concepts and ideas. And so, man, we launched this thing in Matamoros, Mexico, 12 years ago. And we had 25 wide-eyed kids and immediately had one of them manifest the demon, kind of freak out. But we sent these kids, we gave them $2,000. They bought old beat up vans. And we said, we'll see you in the middle of the Mexican jungle in 2 weeks.
What?
And the first person that gets there gets tickets to China. So it was a literal race, right? But the problem with that, especially these days, is everybody's so full of fear and there's so much worry about being sued and insurance. We've had to soften it a little bit.
Oh, okay.
But those first few years were radical. They were really fun.
I can imagine.
But it just blew up on us. We didn't know what we had. And so, you know, it's going down a little bit in numbers, again, just because of the fear that rests on a lot of the parents these days. And I can speak a lot to that. But
what are they afraid? What are parents mostly afraid of? Because I can understand parents being afraid. But what in particular are they afraid of?
Well, they're afraid of losing, you know, Johnny or Alice to you know, to terrorists somewhere in the world, which, you know, I'm always saying, look, I'd rather lose my kids in the nations and except, you know, instead of behind some cubicle or in some school that gets shot up. Let's at least send them out there, kind of giving their lives away and living for something that's bigger than they are. But they can never know that unless we get them out of what they know and understand. And so, you know, you can never go back home until you've left home. And so we've got 1,200 partners around the globe, and we send these kids in from 11 different countries. They go in for a month and they serve our project in those countries. And again, it's wide range. It's, you know, sex trafficking or orphan ministry or, you know, whatever that is that they're going to. And so, you know, we've averaged about 1,000 kids a year that we send around the globe now for these last 12 years. And then what I do is I go in there and I find the leaders of the leaders. You know, I believe a generation reaches itself. You know, they need us as elders. They need our perspective. They need us mostly just to listen. But a generation needs to rise up. And I believe that's what I'll explain to you. The 42nd generation will rise up and actually lead their generation. So I find these kids with that gift of leadership on them, that Ephesians 4 gift. And I say, look, I want you in Spain, no matter if you're going to be a doctor or a janitor or a missionary or a preacher, I don't care what it is, you're going to be a kingdom person. And we got a lot of unlearning to do. So they come for 3 months here and we train them. Then we send them somewhere on the planet on a practicum for 3 months to practice what they've learned. And then they come back for 3 months and we set them on their journey of kingdom living, of missional living. And so that's the world race. And so that's why we did it. We started it. And three of the four of us are still right in the middle of it. And we just did a training camp with a couple hundred kids last week in Gainesville, Georgia. And man, these kids, when they launch, they're so wide-eyed and not don't know what to expect. And it's beautiful. We love it.
You know, and I can't imagine how any child or any young person could be the same after an experience like that. What are the age group that you guys are targeting?
It's 21 and older for the world race. We have the gap year world race, which is for our 18 to 20 year olds, which they do 9 months. They do three countries in 9 months, and they go to our bases around the country. And that is exploding. That gap year is really growing.
Really?
Yeah, big time. The failure that we've had, Joe, the bad part that we did, and we've just now kind of dialing it in, is we didn't help them with reentry well enough. So, you know, what happens, and you know this, you meet Jesus Christ for yourself. You know, we have order in our lives, right? And then we need disorder. So we try to get them out and bring disorder to their lives so they find their own faith, they find their own Jesus, away from their parents and away from what they've been told in church their whole lives, and see eyes open and legs grow and all the things that God is still doing on the earth, and actually practice those things. And we train our, what we call our squad mentors, people in their generation that have been on the world race, go with them and take them out evangelizing, take them out praying for sick people. And it's a powerful, beautiful thing. But coming back, 90-some percent of them come back to America and they spin out. You know, they all come back and they're gonna evangelize America.
Yeah,
and
change the world.
They're gonna build the best coffee shop there ever was, right? Mm-hmm. And then about a month coming back, they're back under that fog. They're back under that thing in America, and they spin out. You know, nobody understands their language. Nobody cares about their story much, and so we've had a lot of young people kind of spin out. And so now, and we can talk about this on another podcast or whatever, I'm building missional communities all over America, with every generation, with elders and leaders and everybody involved, so our racers can come back and go right into a beautiful kingdom community and just keep moving in their lives. It's not about 11 months. This thing's about the rest of your life. We tell them, here's one of our number one things we say is, you know, Jesus you get for free, Christ will cost you everything.
Oh, I love it. Love it, Gary.
So we get this, we get grace, we get mercy, but we have to go find grace. You know, we're made in his image, but we get to go find his likeness. And so we need to teach this generation, this isn't about an easy ride. I mean, I love 1 Corinthians 3, you know, you might escape the flames, but man, are you going to choose gold, or are you just going to choose, you know, straw? And what do we want in life? And so we really try to take these young people on this journey. It's not just a year journey. It's at least 3 years that I want them. I wish I could have them all for 10 years. But man, this is a way of life. This is taking up your cross daily.
And so Gary, with these kids, I say kids, they're not really, they're young adults. But with these young people, this is not costing them anything except their time, right?
Yeah, I mean, they pay to go, but it would be the same as if they were paying rent somewhere and living in America.
I got you.
And they're being discipled as they go.
I got you.
And they're seeing the world, right? So. Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah, that's a great trade-off.
It's a great trade-off. And, we move about 3,900 people a day, I think, with the ministry. And so they're experiencing things that, you know, sitting in your little town in Miami, you're not going to probably experience, but by getting out there and going.
So how are you guys recruiting these young people?
You know, through local church a lot, word of mouth. Through blogs, we're kind of shifting it back to the old DNA and why we started in the first place. It really was to initiate the youth of America. And I had to step out after we lost our son for about 3 or 4 years. And I'll tell you, this generation is completely different than what we started with 12 years ago. You've got to take a lot of time to build their trust. They see right through everything. You've got to be very vulnerable. You got to be very real. They got to smell, you know, smoke on you a little bit to even trust you. But once you build trust with these kids, man, I think they'll go anywhere and they'll do anything. And I've got a lot of hope in this generation.
Man. And I can't wait for you to share later on in the show how they can get in contact with you, because I'm sure there's a lot of men out there listening thinking, wow, I would love for my son or daughter, because you guys doing both men and women.
Oh, well, it's 7-1, Joe. It's 7 women to 1 guy.
So really?
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Oh, man, I love it. I love these young women, man. They're not afraid
of
anything.
Goodness gracious.
Jesus always had to pick a woman to do his job. You know, he had to tell Mary everything because the boys just didn't get it. His disciples were a little dunce. But, you know, I love the women, but we need the men.
Wow. That's my naivete. I just assumed that there'd be more men involved in that, because it seems like something that's courageous and bold.
It is, and it's an adventure. But, you know, we tell our young guys, go to school, graduate, go to college, go into a bunch of debt, get a job, pay for that debt, and get married. You know, all they know is these steps, instead of, hey, man, there's something else to life. And, you know, most of our kids that come here to G42 or on the race have their MBAs. They have their college degrees. They have massive debt. But they realize at the end of that container that they've built that it's just not fulfilling anything in their lives.
And so, what a wonderful I told them that you're gonna be, they're gonna find out how excited you are. But what a wonderful ministry, man. And we're gonna transition. We haven't gotten to G42, but I'm assuming that there's a bridge between that and G42. Tell us a little bit about what you and Lisa are doing with the G42 Leadership Academy.
Yeah, so Andrew Shearman founded. He's 74-year-old Brit American. Been in my life a long time. He's an amazing man of God. We started the first one in Swaziland, Africa. All eight of us, our whole family lived in Swaziland because I just wanted us to be out there to really know what it was like for our kids that we were sending around the world. And so my six kids, man, 16 and younger, all in Africa, all had to be in at dark. And every world race team would have to come and visit us for the first month before they launched on their rest of their journey. And but what G42, so the 42nd generation, I'll give this to you. We teach this for 10 days out here, but quickly, it's the Israelites. You know, they get out of Egypt, and all the Israelites want to go back to Egypt except for Moses, right? And they've got everything provided for. It was like thermodynamics were suspended. You know, their shoes don't wear out. Their clothes don't wear out. They have all the clothes they want. They have charismatic worship services. They have the presence of God. They have everything a church in America that we would want. We would say, that's an amazing church. But they never got to inheritance. They never got to Feast of Tabernacle. They just wandered around in the desert, and they went to 41 stops, Joe, and they named each of those stops what they were feeling. So they named, remember Mara, they named one place bitter because the water was bitter. They named the place lust. You can go through all of these names. They had one city that was named Joy because that's how they were feeling. But they got to that 41st stop, and none of them but two went in. That 42nd stop was the promised land, your inheritance. And we're big on that heaven is now, we get to call heaven down to earth, and it's about inheritance now, that we get an inheritance on earth now as kingdom people. We have a king, his name is Jesus, and we follow him. And so then Matthew 1, go to the genealogies, which of course nobody ever reads, but you go David all the way down and you get to Jesus. He's 41. And Andrew fought with this for years, a decade he fought with this. He's like, okay, where's 42? Well, Christ is 42nd. Us being Jesus Christ, Christ on earth. Jesus we get for free. Christ will cost us everything. So the 42nd generation is the generation that's willing to give up everything and go into the promised land and gain their inheritance and bring kingdom back to earth. Bring heaven to earth now. And so that's the 42nd generation. That's what we're hoping in every generation. We know now that it's going to take, it's a multi-generational call. We need the boomers and the Xers and the millennials and now this new Z generation. You know, 86% of the new generation, 22 and younger, don't believe in evangelism. And 3% of them go to church. And if I'm honest, Joe, I can't blame them. You know, we raised these kids and said, here's what we're Christians, and oh, by the way, we're getting divorced. And as fathers, we said, hey, I'm a Christian man. Oh, I'm addicted to pornography, and I'm addicted to these drugs. And so they look at Christianity, and they go, why would I want that?
There's no power.
There's no power. Yeah. And they go to church on Sundays, and they're bored out of their minds. And I always tell them, you're bored because you're boring. So let's wake up and go do something, right? Yeah. And so you can't blame them, but we've got a real job to do as elders, as a generation, to turn our hearts back to them, to give them our lives, and to see their hearts come alive because we believe in them. Young men want responsibility. They do, but we have to give it to them. And man, I wish we could get into initiation and all that. I
know. Oh man, yeah, you already, man, I'm thinking about three or four different topic show ideas to bring you back on, Gary. We might make you just a resident guest on our show, man.
I would love it, man.
But now I want you, and this might be hard for you to do, well, maybe it won't be, if you had to summarize it in one sentence, what you hope to accomplish with G42, what would it be?
Well, the vision is that God gave to Andrew that we would raise up 100,000 leaders that then would just disciple one. You know, you know the discipleship rule, right? If we just took 10 people and discipled them in a year, and they took one person that next year and did the same, And they took one person to the same. In 30 years, it was 13 billion people would be disciples.
It's crazy. Yeah.
And Jesus said, go make disciples, right? And so our passion is how to raise up a bunch of radical, wild, young disciples that will actually go disciple the next generation. And honestly, it's a piece of toast and a cup of coffee, and it's an hour a week, and it's listening mostly, right? And I always tell elders, because they're scared to death because they were never discipled. There's a ministry in Denver that has 5,000 alumni. They all want to do their second half of life with significance, which I think is ridiculous because we should be doing it significance our whole lives, right? But he interviewed them for me. He sent out a poll and said, how many of you would take 1 hour a week and disciple the next generation, millennials? And every one of them said, we're unqualified. And that's how they feel, right? And I'm telling them, okay, look, an hour a week of just listening and then maybe giving a little perspective. And it changes a kid's life because an adult actually listened to them that didn't have a real strong opinion about how they should act and live, but just listened and loved them really well. And then said, like Paul said, watch my life, do what I do. You'll be godly.
You know, right? Gary, I got to tell you this in full disclosure. I can't let my wife listen to this interview. My wife gets on me all the time because, you know, I started out working with young people. You know, I was a school teacher. And so, and I worked in education for pretty much over 20 years. And then I accepted the call to men's ministry where I'm dealing with older men now, with adults, with mortgages and responsibilities. But my wife is always getting on me about, Joe, why are you targeting these guys when you should be working with the kids, with the young people? Joe, the older guys are a lost generation. And I told her, I can't just ignore the older guys.
No, you help their hearts come alive.
Yeah.
You need an army. You don't just need Joe, right?
Right.
We need 100,000 Joes. That's the point. So
yeah.
You keep after it, man.
But she wants so bad for me to refocus my attention doing what you guys are doing, which is working on this younger generation. So there's a reason why you have so much passion and energy in your voice, because when you're working around this younger generation, and I know it from doing it, yes, they're frustrating at times, but they keep you young at heart because they're bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, and they're willing to take risks that older people are not willing to take.
That's right. That's
you know? Right. But I'm going to tell my wife, if she happens to listen to this episode, I'm going to tell her, I said, well, Tanya, I am working with Gary.
That's right.
So, Gary, you're going to be my connection to keeping the peace in my home.
I'm all in, man.
All right, man. But now, you know what? I can't believe the time is slipping by so fast, but I still want to talk about your story. And you've alluded to it a couple of times. You and Lisa, you guys, even though you're in a new marriage and you guys have a great marriage, you guys have survived many losses. And one of those particular losses was the sudden death of your 19-year-old son, which you guys just commemorated that 6 years now, and his name was Michael. Can you tell us what happened with Michael? And now looking back, what lessons have you guys learned from all of this?
Yeah, absolutely. It's still painful. It never goes away. Anybody that's lost a child, I'm the professional somehow, which I hate, to be honest, right. Bill, but I get every week, I get texts and calls and a bunch of my guys want me to start a whole kind of ministry from it. Cause it's an epidemic and really good parents are losing really good kids. And so there's no judgment or anything in anyone's heart, but yeah, Michael, you know, at 14, we lived in Swaziland. He was leading NFL players for a month. We wouldn't see him. He would take them out on mission adventures around Africa. He was just a leader. He got a full ride scholarship for rugby, became a USA rugby player, played rugby all over the world at a young age, was an all-American football player, could have done anything he wanted, was one of the smartest kids on the planet. We were very, very close. He got into some drugs at about 16, 17. He started sneaking and seeing his birth mom. And she got him into some pretty heavy things, into some trouble with the cartel. We didn't know anything about it. I don't know how I missed it. I'm kind of a prophetic person and couldn't see it. At 19, we got him out of this dark, horrible world of drugs, and they put him on pharmaceutical drugs. She convinced him that he was mentally ill like she was and had depression pills and all kinds of things. And so we got him back, Joe, and we got him restored. And I left him in prison for 4 days, and it almost killed him. He almost got killed in there, but he came out. We just held and cried for hours. And he was sitting at my kitchen table, Easter 2013. And And he said, Daddy, he just told me everything that he'd been through, and he couldn't believe it. And he was so sorry. And I said, absolutely. And I said, go finish. Now we got his rugby scholarship back and reinstated. And I said, go finish school. We'll get you back this summer and we're going to get everything back on track. And he said, Dad, don't send me back. I'm not going to make it. And, it's one of those things that I would want to change in my life. There's not a lot. We don't want a lot of regret, but I have them. And I said, no, son, I think, as your father, I want you to finish. We finish well, and then we're going to get, there'll be grace on the back end of that, and blah, 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 my Christianese, all my stuff. As he was driving away, he turned and looked at me, and I knew it was the last time I was going to see him. So April 16th at 11:30, Holy Spirit woke me up, call your son. I called him. He didn't answer. At 12:05, I got a text that said, sorry, Daddy, I love you. Next thing I knew, the phone was ringing. He died a violent, violent death, Joe. He had to die a certain way for the cartel, they tell us. So his neck was cut open. He went out a four-story window. And it about ended us. In most marriages that are blended don't make it. Most marriages that lose a child don't make it. And we went into shock. I was numb. Lisa started raking the lawn at 3 a.m. in the morning. It was snowing in Colorado. I got there. My friend in ministry, Seth Barnes, beat me to St. Louis. That's where he was at school. I walked into that room where he was laying. They had a collar around his neck. And I was going to go lay hands on him and ask God to bring him to life. And when I touched him, he was cold. And I just folded. I was done. So, the thing, you almost don't make it. There was nights that I just about didn't make it. I have an incredible, beautiful friend that I helped plant a church with, Lonnie Dyer in Colorado Springs, that would come and help me. He would remind me how to breathe at 3 a.m. And I had buddies that were always on call and people that were just there. His funeral, 3,200 people showed up, and this whole movement. We have a foundation in his name, and these kids made bands and T-shirts and it was just this whole movement that happened that we're still carrying his name in. But you don't get your son back. And I'm not doing ministry, Joe, because of that. God promised me 100-fold or 100,000 young Michaels that I'm going to call out and into ministry and into full-time kingdom work. And that's part of why we're out here, and we're going to do that. And now, it's becoming that gift again that we talked about earlier, that I was sitting with Seth Barnes, and I wanted to warn anybody, if you ever meet Seth that have interest in missions, don't sit with him on his deck. You'll end up living somewhere else in the world. I've done it three times, and I've sold everything and moved three times. But he said to me, we need to get you back to Spain and there with Andrew. And so we sold everything. We didn't even own a spoon. And my wife and I and our youngest son at 13 at the time, it's almost 17 now, we moved here. And I sat on the med many days just staring at the water, Joe, and in the midst of this, I want to tell this to you real quick, where there was a little conference going on here, and this young woman walked up to me, and she didn't know me, and she started prophesying over me, and she told me all the millions I've preached to and all the countries I've been to. And she was literally reading my mail, as a lot of prophets will say. And at the end of it, though, she said, I don't know how to say this, Gary, but you laid your sword down, and the enemy took your own sword and killed your son with it. Oh, Joe, I was like, coming up to like, I didn't know what. And I fell over in travail, Joe. And I wept for hours. And God started unwrapping my soul and healing me. And what I tell men, Joe, now, pick up your sword. If you've laid your sword down, if you've just gone numb, if you've just gone unconscious, if you're just going through the motions, man, God gave you a sword, and it's a big sword. And we've got to pick up our swords and fight for the next generation. This opiate crisis and our inner cities and all the things going on, man, we need dads, we need fathers, we need masters that will step up and fight for the generation. And I'll tell you, I'm doing my part, and I'm calling out as many as I can to do the same.
I tell you, man, Gary, I owe Bruce a big one on this one for introducing me to you, man. Wow, what a phenomenal, phenomenal story and just perspective that you've just given us. I mentioned to you before we came on the air that just recently, one of my brothers in Christ, his son died at 22 and he took his own life. And I attended the funeral, and it was just a tough thing to attend. Quickly for us before we transition to the man up questions, what advice would you give to guys out there who are supporting fathers like you who are going through similar situations of losing a child at such an early age?
Yeah, don't quote scriptures. If I would have heard Romans 8:28 one more time, honestly.
Which is one of my favorite verses too. Yeah,
and that's all we know how to do sometimes because we don't know the pain. Listen, it's you got to enter the pain with your friends. You've got to sit and just be. You don't need to talk. You don't need to fix it. I promise you, you need to listen. And then just trust Holy Spirit. If there's something of perspective that you can give every once in a while, you do that. But man, go slow. And just be there. Like I said, Lonnie and a guy named Mike Passman, these guys would just show up. It didn't matter when it was. And just remind me how to breathe. And remind me. And so it's a devastating, horrible thing. And it's also a thing that's going to wake up, I hope, an older generation that even though it's not your own kid, it's your friend's kids. And I think we had 29 suicides since January in Colorado Springs, in the richest county, one of the richest counties in the country. And it's just we've got 130 internationally headquartered ministries in this little town of Colorado Springs, and the number one suicide rate amongst teenagers anywhere. It's an epidemic. It's a spiritual battle. We don't fight flesh and blood. We've got to fight for this next generation.
You know, and Gary, thanks for sharing that with us, because I know there's a lot of men out there who they don't know what to do. They get paralyzed when they hear a tragedy like this strike one of their friends. But I love what you said, enter the pain with them. The Bible tells us that we ought to not only rejoice with those when they're rejoicing, but to weep with those who are weeping.
That's right.
I love that. I love that. Now, Gary, we're going to change the pace a little bit. We're going to get into the man up questions. And these are infamous 5 questions that we ask every man that comes on the show to share with us. And they start with the letters MANUP. And all they require is you are fearless and brutal honesty, which I don't think you're going to have a problem with. So the question is, Gary, are you ready?
Okay, I'm ready.
All right. And Gary, you're going to do fine. And guys, we'll be right back with my guest, Gary Black, after this short break. Hey, Mighty Warrior. You know, the great John Wesley once said that if you give him 300 men who fear nothing but God, hate nothing but sin, and are determined to know nothing but Jesus Christ crucified, he said he would set the world on fire. Do you know that one quote changed my life? Because after hearing it, God immediately gave me a vision to build a team of 300 men who would change the world for Christ. But I didn't realize it at the time that a man is the hardest thing to reach. And if you don't believe me, just ask any pastor or men's ministry leader or even a wife. Now, due to the success of our Real Men Connect podcast, we've managed to reach and teach men all over the world in 43 countries and still counting. But John Wesley knew when he spoke those famous words, just like Jesus did, that there's a huge difference between attracting a passive crowd of men and recruiting a committed team of men. So we decided to launch the Real Men 300. The Real Men 300 is an opportunity for you to join an exclusive team of men who've agreed to financially partner with Real Men Connect to be personally mentored, supported, and coached so they can be professionally trained and equipped to mentor, support, and disciple the next generation of men for Christ. So we want to personally help you grow in Christ while you're supporting us in ministry. We're a nonprofit organization and we rely heavily on your financial support. So we're asking you to consider partnering with us by giving at least $30 a month, that's only $1 a day, to help us help you be the man God called and created you to be. To give or to find out more, just go to realmen300.com. That's realmen300.com and join the 300 today. Welcome back, Warriors. I'm with my guest, Gary Black, who's director at G42 Leadership Academy, and he works with what he described to us as the world race, which I'm telling you, Gary, I wish I was young again. I think I would be bold enough to try something like that just to see how it would be.
Absolutely. I said I wish I would have had that when I was young. I would have done it for sure.
Yeah, my son now, he just turned 23, so he's a little bit outside of the age range, but I think he might be interested in something
like
that.
Hey, our average age is 26 that goes on the race.
Oh, is it? Hey, yeah. Shoot, maybe that may not be out of a possibility for Kindle. Maybe I need to share them, let them listen to this episode. But let's get to the man up questions, man. And the first letter starts with letter M, and it's mistake. And obviously, Gary, you've been through a lot in your life, and I know it's going to be hard for you to pinpoint just one. But what was the one mistake that you learned the most from as a man?
you know, Jesus says you either fall on the rock or the rock falls on you. And my ego caused a lot of the pain in my life. And man, not being vulnerable and not dying to yourself daily and picking up your cross and trusting Holy Spirit, man, that, you know, my ego ran most of my life. And you know, it takes suffering to dislodge our ego. So I've had to walk through a lot of suffering, Joe. And so I would say my mistake early on is, man, let go of your ego. Find ways. Have men and other people be able to speak deeply into your soul and let you know, speak the truth in love of the things you can't see.
Mm-hmm. You know, that Gary, it never amazes me that we bring on so many guests. You're talking about probably over 200 guests we've had on the show. And in some form or another, we're all saying the same thing. And I'm hoping that the men who are listening say, maybe that's a clue that all these guys who don't know each other are saying the same thing about our egos, being vulnerable, connecting with other men. That's why we call the show Real Men Connect. And so thank you for, again, reinforcing that message. Now, the A stands for attitude, Gary, and you've worked with a lot of young people. And you've seen them. And now I know there's a 7-to-1 ratio between the females and the males that you see. But if there was an attitude in the men that you see, the young men that you see, that you could change, what would it be?
You know, comfortability. Probably, I think it's the enemy of America. We become so comfortable and so independent instead of interdependent. We know we're the independent nation. And man, God never built us to be independent. He built us to walk through life together, and especially as men. And so I would say that. I would say that that narcissism that's been birthed, the only way that it gets, we have to confront that.
You know, and Gary, I can't wait to ask you the next question, because what you're doing, it takes up so much of your time right now in ministry. What you and Lisa are doing together, taking up a lot of time. But what would be the next big thing you would attempt to do for God in ministry if you couldn't fail?
You know, that's interesting, because Andrew and I just had this conversation. I sit around a lot of time with my 70-year-old mentor, and he just weeps. And he said to me the other day two things really interesting. He said, you know, I don't think I ever need another thing from God. And what he's always taught me is always get to please, never, or always get to thank you, never to please. We don't need to ask, please God. We just need to say, thank you, God. But I asked him this. I said, what if we couldn't fail and we could do something? He said, I wouldn't want to do it. I wouldn't want to touch it. Because without the struggle, without that failure, we don't learn anything. You never learn when you're successful. You only learn when you fail. And it really struck my spirit that, you know, I want to see a multi-generational movement. That's where we're headed. I'm calling out the elders that are getting ready to retire to come and give their lives away with us. So we're doing Rethink Retirement events all over the country in America. And so I want to see this multi-generational. That's what I would love to do if I couldn't fail. But I know that I'm gonna. And I'm okay with that.
And so I love your answer, though, Gary. Said that's what you want to see. But God, with some failure attached to it. with some struggle. I love it.
Exactly.
That is great. Now, Gary, the U stands for understand. And when you were younger, what was the one thing you didn't understand about being a man, but you understand better now?
You know, you have to have that first half of life, right? You've got to build those containers of work and education and girlfriend and marriage. But every time you get to the top of that ladder, you kick it over because it doesn't fulfill. And we need that. We need kind of that Old Testament right and wrong, black and white thing to bring us into our second half of life. And, you know, young men should be hitting that at about 30 now. We have extended adolescence. It used to be 20s. But now in your 30s, you get to step into, I don't need to be successful. I just want everyone around me to be successful, right? All success does is stroke my ego. And so, man, I wish I would have known that I was in this stage of life of a little boy learning to become a man by building these containers, and that's okay. It's a righteous thing. But man, I was headed to something completely different in freedom, and not about right and wrong, but life and death. And about both and. It's always yes and yes. It's never right or wrong. It's both and usually. And so that would be what I'd want to know, but you know, possibly that would get in the way of the struggle and the growth. And so
wow, that's good stuff, Gary. That's really good, man. Now here's my last question. We'll let you out of here with this one. Even as a mighty man of God, which you are, what problem do you still struggle with as a man even today?
You know, it's simple, insecurity. I still get insecure. The accolades start coming again and the stage starts getting built again. And I love what Richard Rohr says, one of my favorite authors, especially on men's issues. He says, you know, I pray to God to embarrass me at least once a day. And then I watch what I do with that. Right. And so, man, I get embarrassed once a day, and then I have to watch my attitude. Do I get angry? Do I get frustrated? Do I feel stupid? But I would say, Joe, is, you know, insecurity still can plague me, and I've got to be very aware of it and immediately confess it and then keep moving.
Oh, that is awesome. Now, see, Gary, you knocked this out of the park, man. You did a great job. Thanks, man, for your transparency, your honesty, and even your vulnerability in tackling the man up questions. I think that's going to bless a lot of men out there. And Gary, can you believe
you're an awesome interviewer, Joe?
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you. I received that. But thank you so much, man. And Gary, can you believe we've reached the end of our show today, man? Yeah. I mean, it went by so fast. But I want the guys to know out there that, guys, don't worry about it. We're going to be back again next week with a new guest, with new insights and new lessons. So make sure you don't miss it. But I'd like to thank my guest, Gary Black, for joining us today and for being so gracious with his time and with all the great nuggets of wisdom that he's dropped on us today. Gary, thank you so much, man, for making time for this.
Man, I love it, Jill. Thank you so much. Incredible.
And Gary, you know, we prayed before we came on the show, and I tell you, I was even having a rough day starting off of my day, and you prayed for me and prayed with me. And now I see, you know, like you said, there's got to be some struggle. And it was a struggle to get to this interview, but I can see now that God had a plan for me, and it was such a blessing to have you on the show. But quickly for our listeners, Gary, if they wanted to find out more about you and your ministry, because you guys are doing just such phenomenal work, if they want to find out about how to even to get connected to your ministry, what would be the best way for them to reach out to you?
Just GaryandLisaBlack.com. I do everything with my bride. And so www.GaryandLisaBlack.com. We've got podcasts that we started on there and blogs and all kinds of things. So you can email us and directly, and we would love to be in touch with you with anything and serve you the way that we can.
And that's common spelling that, right? Gary and Lisa, G-A-R-Y and L-I-S-A, right?
That's right. And black like the color.
Just like the color, black.com. You know, and we'll put that in the show notes as well, Gary, so they'll be able to get access to that. But man, just from talking to you today, I'm putting you on the spot right now, but I want to extend an invitation to bring you on this show multiple times, because there's so many different things that we can do. Even what you do in ministry with Lisa just fascinates me, that you guys can do this and not kill each other. And so I would love to bring you on the show to talk about that.
All right, man. I love it, Joe. Thank you so much. You are an awesome man of God.
Well, thank you. Guys, and please do us a favor. And I'm sure you enjoyed the show. So do this, us a very important favor. It only takes about 30 seconds. Go over to iTunes and rate this program and this episode for us, because it's the best way to help us get this program in the hands, ears, and hearts of men just like you. And please don't keep us a secret. Share us with your friends. We know that you're doing that, because guys, we're getting up in the rankings and you make it easy for us to do that. So until next time, I'm Dr. Joe, your man builder with realmenconnect.com, reminding you that we are males by birth, but we are men by choice. So each and every day, choose to be the man of God that he's called and created you to be, because a male is a terrible thing to waste. So until next time, stay strong, stay blessed, and as always, stay in God's grip.
Thank you for listening to the Real Men Connect podcast with Dr. Joe Martin. Real Men Connect isn't just a podcast. It's a mission, ministry, and movement to help good men become the great men God called and created us to be. And the best is yet to come. So if you enjoyed this episode, go ahead and leave us a review in iTunes. It really helps us to build the podcast and to reach, teach, and impact more men, all for the glory of God. And make sure you check out realmenconnect.com to get our free tools and resources to help you go from good man to great man God's way. Again, that's realmenconnect.com. Thank you for listening. We'll see you in the next episode.
Real Men Connect is a listener-supported podcast, and we're now the number one radio podcast on iTunes for Christian men. If this podcast has blessed you in any way and you'd like to help us continue to bless and transform the lives of even more husbands, fathers, sons, and leaders, please prayerfully consider supporting this ministry. Just go to realmenconnect.com and click on the donate button. And may God bless your faithful giving.